Welcome to Tech Webcast, Australia's leading technology show. Download our iPhone app, www.techwebcast.info.
Welcome to Tech Webcast, episode 109, recorded on the 15th of January, 2011. Today's hosts are Brad and Jason with special guest, the one and only Robert Scoble. Over to you, Brad.
Hey, what's up, Jason?
Hey, how's it going?
I'm going well, mate. Yourself?
Not too bad, not too bad.
That's the way, mate. That's the way.
Nice afternoon to be indoors out of the rain. And
that's raining there where you are, is it?
Yeah, got a
well,
bit
the sun's
of sprinkling,
out here.
Just enough to be annoying and not let you get your washing done.
Oh, okay. Okay, cool, mate. On Skype, we've got Robert Scoble. What's up, mate?
Hey, thanks for having me on.
All good, mate. All good.
Yeah, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for coming on, yeah. I think you're one of the famous people we've ever actually had on before.
The most famous.
Well, no, that's a pretty low bar there, so.
Yeah, we limbo a lot here.
Yeah.
We're down under.
Yeah. So, mate, tell people about your website and that sort of thing. What sort of things do you do on the internet?
I go around the world and interview tech executives and innovators, geeks, people who are building world-changing technology, basically.
Okay. What's your favorite thing so far that you've seen?
Oh, that's a tough one. The Google car.
Google car, yeah.
Self-driving one.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. But that's a little far off, you know. That probably 10, 15, 20 years before you know, you'll really see a lot of them on the road.
Yeah. Electricity only?
No, that's a gas car. It's running in a Prius, but it's driving, you know, it steers and brakes and steps on the gas. So they've hooked it into the control systems of the car. Probably the coolest thing you can go and buy right now is the Microsoft Kinect.
Yeah, I've got one of those. It's brilliant. I love it.
Yeah.
My daughter is moving in tomorrow, and she loves the Kinectimals and Kinect Adventures and sporting and everything. She just goes crazy over it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Cool. I bought the Your Shape Fitness Evolve to get some exercise, and it's pretty good. It monitors what you're doing, tells you when you're doing the wrong thing, and keeps you motivated, and links up to the Your Shape Center website so other people and friends can see what you're doing and maybe compete against you. And so it's really, really gets you up and moving and exercising stuff when you don't realize you're doing it.
Great. I got to check into that.
Mm. And what sort of phone and iPad device do you have? Like, what sort of applications do you like to use on your iPad, Robert, and iPhone?
On my iPad. I should have brought my iPad up here, but I of course, I like Flipboard.
Yeah, Flipboard's cool. Yep. Love Flipboard. Yep.
I have a bunch of different apps. Angry Birds. I love the app where you can point it at the sky and it tells you what stars it's aimed at.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, a constellation one. That'd be nice.
Yeah, it's called Skywalk, if I remember right. I should have brought my iPad up. I'm trying to remember which ones I actually use.
I see you do. You're a big fan of Quora. Do they have a application or just?
No, it's just a web page right now. I imagine they just are turning on an API, so I imagine that they'll
pretty
have an app coming out eventually. But you know,
what do you use Quora for?
Quora is mostly right now it's a QA site, a question and answer site. So people ask questions and you answer them. But what got me really starting to use it, because I ignored it for about 6 months. It came out in something like March or some early this year.
Yep.
And I first heard about it in July, and I ignored it until November-ish. And what got me into it was all the quality of the people answering the questions. You know, Reid Hoffman's been there. Steve Case, who started AOL's been there. And there's all, you know, Evan Williams, who started Twitter, answered a question a couple days ago. So there's some interesting people answering questions, and that's what caught my eye. And the interactivity of it is pretty well designed. It's just done by a guy who left Facebook, was the CTO at Facebook and left, and is doing this new company. So,
Is it in a competition with Mahalo and Yahoo Answers, or it's something completely different to those?
No, it's in competition with them. It looks better than Mahalo Answers. It doesn't have a lot of crappy ads around it. And everybody who answers a question has a real name. So it's your personal friends who are answering the questions. And that's a huge difference from like Yahoo Answers. You go to Yahoo Answers, and there's a lot more people there. But you don't know anything about who they are. You know, you just know, oh, okay, they, you know, there's a bunch of answers here. You don't know who they are. Everybody on Quora is somebody I know, you know. And if I don't know, if somebody new comes in, I can click on them and see who they are on Facebook and Twitter, and they have a real name, and they have a real social network.
Yeah, sort of a bit like Path's idea, where just your friends are involved with what you're doing.
Well, it's not limited like that. It's more of
a friends thing than just anybody on the internet doing whatever with your stuff.
Well, because of how you onboard everybody, you know, you add your Facebook and your Twitter into it, and so everybody you're already following on those systems gets followed on Quora.
Right.
And it's like an add-on onto Twitter or Facebook, and that's makes it very sticky and powerful.
And also, more people are accountable for what they say. They're not just going to troll people and say
absolutely. There's not
just know who they are.
There's no spam and bad actors, trolls. I haven't seen show up yet. There's a little bit of noise just because you know there's questions being asked because that you might not be interested in, and that's always going to be true in something like this. But hopefully, soon they'll give us filtering and say you know let us follow. Well, already. You have a choice of who you follow or topics you follow. So if you only want to see questions about wine, just follow the wine topic. Don't follow any people. And if you only want to see questions from you know a small group of people, just add 5 people into it, and don't be like me and add 4,000.
If you follow wine, you might see a lot of posts from John C. Dvorak or something on there.
Well, or you know, yeah. The wine ones aren't – I'm watching one, but it hasn't gone mainstream yet, so it hasn't gotten good answers yet in a lot of topics. Right now it's really good about startups, entrepreneurialism, technology. You know, it's all the geeks who are using it, the early adopter types. And it feels a lot like Twitter did in the first, year.
Getting a little bit of traction.
Oh, it's getting a lot. I'm getting 500 new followers a day right now. So there's a lot of people checking it out. And it's starting to become not so early adopter. You know, I'm starting to see some questions like about cigars. There's one on my screen right now. Where can I find American-made knives? And so you can tell the questions are broadening out from just geeky stuff.
I suppose it's a lot more static location to find answers to things than Twitter. You might ask an answer and then 100 people will answer it. But if you want to come back in a couple of months or a year, then good luck finding what you asked and where it was and who answered it because it's just all gone.
The search engine here is really good, and that's really fun too. Just sitting there and searching for things, you'll find a lot of interesting questions. You know, search for an obscure startup or... You know, in fact, let's try Australia. Let's see what happens there. Australia. See, there's a topic for Australia. Then there's frequently asked questions. Then there's, it shows you, well, you can search for Sydney, Queensland.
Tell you about all our dangerous spiders and snakes.
Not that I see. Australian wine, Australian politics, startups in Australia. And then we can just click on topic. Now you can start a question like that, you know.
Yeah.
So cool. And people ask all sorts of
all right.
different questions.
Okay. Next question is, how did you get started, Robert, in what you do?
Well, my dad was an engineer in Silicon Valley, so got started in the family.
Okay.
And I was always around technology. But, you know, when I was in junior high. I lived in Cupertino about a mile from Apple Computer, and so my dad bought an Apple II in 1977, you know, the first year Apple was out, and my school bought an Apple II the same year.
Nice.
So I was in the first computer club. My dad had an Apple II. So I was always around the new personal computer industry, And I got a tour of Apple when it was one building when I was in junior high, because was, you know, I was an Apple fan back then. Even then, yeah, you know?
You still are, aren't you? An Apple fan?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
Can you tell? I got like
yeah.
1, 2, 3 Apple computers around me. You know?
Yeah. What do you think of the new Airs?
Which one?
The new Airs.
I like that. I haven't bought one because my gadget budget was blown out last year.
The limit or over the limit?
I went way over the limit.
Well,
there's a lot of cool stuff to buy last year. There's iPad. I bought a new laptop. I bought the Microsoft Kinect. What else did I buy? I bought a new screen.
iPhone 4.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, of course. Yep. That, you know, have to have iPhone.
Yeah, for sure.
So yeah.
Who was your favorite person you've met so far?
Yeah,
person.
Yeah, the best. My most favorite. Thinking about it, yeah, was Doug Engelbart, and he's the guy who in 1967 invented the mouse and showed off an operating system that looked like what the Macintosh was. You know, it had Windows and it had hypertext and stuff like that. And it's still the demo of all time. Anybody who's thinking of starting a company should go back and watch that demo, because it's you know, it is the demo. If you search for Google and Engelbart, you'll find it. But I just found him interesting because he's one of the few people I've met who's truly visionary, who really saw a world way before it happened and described that world and built that world. And his ideas were so weird, he got kicked out of the research community in the 1970s. And he is actually a little bit bitter about the fact that he had to work so hard to get people to see his ideas. And I talked with him about that. I said, why did they kick you out of the research world? And he said, well, you have to go back to what computing was like in the late 60s or 1970s. He said, the only computers you have, and now that I've visited the Computer History Museum, which, by the way, is awesome. They just yesterday they opened a really nice new exhibit if you come to Silicon Valley. But now that I've seen this, the computers back then were really expensive, $1 trillion computers in today's dollars, and were only in places like research laboratories or government. You know, the government had several to track Russian missiles and stuff like that, or banks. You know, really big banks would have one. And so the only people in society who were going to be using computers were the PhD students who programmed them, or secretaries, right, who entered the data entry clerks, basically. And nobody else was going to use one. And he saw a world where everybody was going to have one, and it was going to be cheap, right? Our iPhone today is $200, but has more computing power than a $1 trillion computer did in the 50s or 60s. So that was, so his idea is he saw a future where these devices were going to be ubiquitous and cheap, and he was dreaming about how they would be used, and he was pushing his friends to see that world, and they didn't want to see it.
Wasn't it IBM, I think, was supposed to have said that I can see a market for maybe 12 computers in the whole world?
Yeah, and if you're in that context, that's true. Yeah, go and look at my post about the Google car. You know, and I interviewed the guy who wrote the algorithms for that, and there's a lot of pushback about that. It's like, why would you want a car that drives itself? You know, would you trust it? Who would pay for it if it got in a wreck? And there's all this consternation. But I can certainly see a world where a car is going to drive itself. I've been in one, and you know, other people are scared of it.
Trust scared it more of than a lot of people who shouldn't be on the roads anyway.
Well, even if you're a good driver, you know, you get distracted or you fall asleep or you know, or text comes in and you're stupid, you make a stupid mistake, you know, like that.
People are pretty limited to what they can do at once, whereas the car's got so many things that
and
are
also,
going to be monitoring at once.
Exactly, and also the computer is faster and it sees through fog. It reacts faster because it's a computer, you know.
Yeah.
Your brain sometimes doesn't react. It doesn't know what it's seeing when a situation happens in front of you that you haven't seen before, where a computer can just say, you know, I'm seeing something and I'm slowing down.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
A good example of this, by the way, I interviewed the director of safety at Ford, who's building all these radar systems, and he says they studied people's reaction in accidents, and very few people have applied full braking pressure going into an accident. And he said that even if you're going to get in an accident, if you can help a driver put full braking pressure, that will scrub off some energy going into a crash, and that could potentially save lives. And, you know, when you think about that, the human brain just doesn't react quick enough to changing conditions.
Nobody gets enough driving experience in avoiding things and defensive driving. Mostly, you can see if you can drive a car, turn, pull over, and watch out for those. Like, okay, here's your license, and then something big does come up that's obviously unexpected, and then suddenly you don't know what to do, especially if it's slippery.
Oh yeah, you know, I was in Paris where that snowed for the first time in a while, and people were spinning out and, you know, not handling it very well. And
I always find it interesting in Europe and that, where every single year it gets snowy, but people still not prepared for it.
Yep. But, you know, we'll see trucks use it first, because you're paying, somebody's paying a truck driver. When it's your personal car, you don't understand the opportunity cost that's there, and so it's hard for you to invest in technologies that can help you spend less time doing something.
All I can think of is, it reminds me of that episode on The Simpsons where they learn that Homer learns that the box drives the truck when you fall asleep and you don't do anything. It's like they've already seen the future there, and it's going to happen.
Yep. That's true. And you know, so like driving across Nevada or in Australia, driving across the country, it's a straight road. It's no fun to drive that. You know, why can't you set your car to drive across or your truck and go to sleep? You know,
play games with the kids,
or watch a video, or
kids,
something.
Or read, watch your DVD.
Watch a movie. You know, there's all sorts of stuff you can do to get time back. But if you're paying a truck driver who's doing it every single day because he's driving across the country, you know, then it actually costs money, and you can actually make a return on investment by investing a $200,000 device and putting it in the truck, and you'll get money back. And that's why you'll see it first in some trucks like that, you know, that drive cross country. Plus the insurance costs will go down, because the wreckage will, they'll be safer and they'll have fewer accidents. You know, the truck drivers won't be drugged out, you know, trying to cross the country.
For sure, for sure. All right, next question, Robert, to you, mate. Have you got an iPhone app out yourself for your what you do?
Yeah, Mobile Roadie, a company. Mobile Roadie makes apps for like conferences and musicians and celebrities and stuff like that. And they made me an app, and it's available on all sorts of platforms now. And they made me an iPhone, an Android, a BlackBerry, a Nokia one.
Nice. So what does it do?
Not much.
Has your videos and websites.
Good answer.
Yeah, it has Twitter, so you can see my latest tweets, see my latest events, because they've hooked into PlanCast and pulled out all the events that I go to, and you can see all my blogs and my photos from Flickr and my videos from YouTube, that kind of thing.
All right, check it out. Favorite thing at CES you've seen this year?
Well, that's a tough one. I think the coolest thing was some eyeglasses that were had a liquid crystal in them. So if you need bifocals and you have trouble focusing near and far, you touch the rim of the glasses and it refocuses the lens for near sight. So that was pretty cool, but hard to really see, and you know, it doesn't hit everybody. The device of the year was the Motorola Zoom, which is an Android-based tablet.
I've heard a little bit of that.
Same.
Yeah, I mean, it's a nice tablet, good screen, good speed. It has an HDMI port, so you can project off of it.
It's got Honeycomb.
Yeah, it's running the newest Google Google Chrome OS. And
what do you think of that compared to the Playbook?
I like the Playbook, but no apps. And yeah, I don't think the developers are going to support RIM.
Had one of those applications that platforms that let you do for multiple things you might do for iPhone and Android, and if it also can output for Playbook, then yeah, you might as well click it. But it's not like they're going to go, oh, let's drop iPhone and let's drop the Android and we'll do just Playbook stuff.
Yeah, it's tough, because if you go into Best Buy or wherever and you're comparing iPad to Motorola to a bunch, there'll be like 5 or 10 Android tablets in the store. You pick them up, and okay, they all feel the same. They all have a nice experience. They all have nice screen, nice, you know, design. Apple might in your head be better as a brand, but you know, let's assume you don't care about that. You care about price, maybe. But then you start going, well, the iPad has all these cool apps. It has, you know, Netflix and you know, that Sky app that I was talking about, and games and da 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 da. And Android seems like it has a lot of apps on it, you know. And then you get to RIM, and it's like, there's no apps here. Where's all the apps? And that's going to be a real retardant on sales. Microsoft is having the same problem with Windows Phone 7. It's a great OS. It's finally, you know, they did what they needed to. They rebuilt the OS from scratch and really did a nice job on it. Feels nice to use it. It has, you know, a nice phone and nice features, but it has no apps. You know, it has 6,000 apps where an iPhone has 500,000.
And one of those, they had to pay developers to port over to them too, didn't they?
Exactly. So, you know, if your local bank has an iPhone app and it doesn't have a Windows Phone 7 app, you're going to buy an iPhone, you know, or you're going to buy an Android because there's lots of apps on the Android.
And a lot of people would be thinking the Playbook is going to be business, because that's what the attachment to the BlackBerry name is, really, isn't it?
Yeah. Now, some people say, well, apps don't matter. You know, there's still a lot of users who don't care about apps, but I'd say that's bullshit. Even if you don't care about apps, you still, you're going to ask your friends, which phone should I buy? You know, oh, you should buy this iPhone because it has Angry Birds on it. And it's like, you're still going to buy it. You're still going to use Angry Birds, or you're going to, you know, want Facebook or, you know, an email app or something. I don't get it. And then if you start getting into the app world, you're going to be really disappointed if you're not on a platform with a lot of apps.
What did you think? What was your opinion of CES in all?
Great networking, but nothing really groundbreaking there that I saw. You know,
more of the same.
Yeah, it's iteration. The TVs were better, you know, bigger, faster, sharper, and better 3D. Better 3D glasses. Mm. You know, you saw a few gadgets that are cool, like those glasses I was talking, the eyeglasses I was talking about. The tablets, there was 35 tablets, but they were all copies of the iPad, let's be honest. It was sort of that kind of show. It's like, where's something to get really excited and hot and bothered about? And Microsoft Kinect was it, but that came out last year, so, you know, it wasn't new.
Did you get to experience any of the 3D TVs that don't require glasses?
A few of them, and they're starting to look pretty good, but you still have to be in a certain spot. You know, it has a sweet spot because of the way the optical 3D works, and it's still not as good as you know, a really good 3D TV with the glasses on.
I've heard people say just wait for 4K TV, and then nobody cares about 3D anymore, and it'll just fade away.
I don't agree with that, because, I mean, people still wait in line for the IMAX, you know, to watch the latest 3D movies. You know, there's still, when you see 3D, it still is, it's like, wow, you know, that looks cool. The problem is, you know, a lot of us just bought HD TVs in the last couple of years, because, you know, that was a hot thing to do. So, I'm not ready to throw away my TV, and I'm not ready to spend another $2,000 or $3,000 on one. Mm. And there's no content. You know, there's not a push to, you know, Yeah. Even if I was excited about 3D, which I'm sort of excited about it, there's no I watch. There's three shows a week on. You know, it's like okay, there's no movies to watch. And
the big question then is, which 3D technology do you lock yourself into? It's like VHS and Beta all over again.
Well, that's less of a no. The TVs now are pretty compatible with 3D. It's I don't think you have to worry about a format war. You might have to worry about how much you're paying for the TV because the quality is better on the better ones. But
don't you need specific glasses depending on what 3D technology?
Yeah, they're pretty much all using the same kind of glass, the polarized, not the polarized, the LCD lens glasses. They're all pretty much using the same kind of glasses now. If you don't get the good glasses, the good set, it seems like the entire industry was using the same technology for the glasses. So
that's good news then. That's one thing that I was concerned about, whether you're going to get the left, right polarized or the circular polarized, lenticular or what.
Yeah, and maybe there's a problem there. I didn't sense it. It seemed like everybody was using the same system. Anyways, it doesn't matter. The over-the-air content will play on all the sets. It's not like Blu-ray versus DVD or Blu-ray versus HD DVD, something like that. You're going to be able to watch the content no matter what 3D TV you buy.
Do you use a TV at home, Robert?
A TV or TiVo?
TiVo.
I have a recorder on my cable box, but it's not a TiVo branded one.
Have you used one before?
I've used a TiVo, but not for a long time, because all the cable systems that I hook onto don't use TiVos.
Oh, okay.
Things don't even get popular here. But I've just bought one a few months ago for $600. Now they're $500, plus they throw in a lot of free things like the Wi-Fi card, an extra $100 worth of download credits and things like that. So I think it might pick up a bit here. It's just a lot simpler than the other devices and easier for upgrades. It all does it automatically for you. I like that kind of thing.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. I haven't really looked. The DVR that I have works good enough. And
that's it.
If I'm buying more devices, it's the Xbox, it's the Apple TV, the Roku box,
You can save your budget this year for the iPad 2 iPhone 5.
Yeah. Of course.
What's going to be in
the Verizon phone. I'm buying a Verizon phone too.
For sure, mate.
iPhone?
I'm buying that first day. I'll pay an extra.
Doesn't matter that somebody calls and knocks you off the internet.
calls it what? Sorry?
Somebody calls you and it knocks you off the internet because you can't do two at once.
We'll see. It probably does because I do that a lot, but I'm probably going to keep my AT&T phone, so we'll see.
All right, two more questions.
I need a couple months with it to see which one I actually use and grab when going out of the house, and I have to see how good it is at not dropping calls in San Francisco. And also I want to see a couple months worth of usage to see if it gets worse, after a bunch of iPhone users come into the system.
All right, two more questions. What do you want to see in the iPhone 5 and the iPad 2?
iPad 2 is clearly going to have two cameras, which will let you do Skype and all sorts of fun stuff. It'll have a higher res screen. It'll probably be thinner. It'll probably be faster. I'd like it to project better, especially now that the systems like Prezi and Slide Rocket are supporting the iPad. Executives want to take the iPad into a conference room, hook it up to a projector, and project off of it and give a presentation. And it's a great platform for doing that. The touch interface is really good for presentations. Even if you use something that looks like PowerPoint, you just slide through your slides with your finger. But it's not good for that right now. The iPad 2 is not good. I'm sorry, iPad 1 is not good for that. iPad 2, I hope, is better for that kind of use case.
Cool. I can't think of what else I could put in the iPhone 5.
I'm talking about iPad right now. I don't know about iPad, what else they can do. I like the Galaxy Tab, the 7-inch form factor, because reading a book on that, it's just a nicer form factor to sit and hold it and read a book. of course, you know, the argument there is just go and buy a Kindle. It's $139 and use the Kindle for that form factor, and then for everything else, use your iPad, right? And that sort of makes sense.
For sure.
A lot of people say the Kindle app on the iPhone's better than the Kindle itself. You find that?
I do, because the screen refreshes faster, and I don't care about the reflective screen so much. You know, I'm not reading a lot of books. I'm reading a lot of Twitter and a lot of YouTube and a lot of TED videos, and you know, I just got a new ebook style thing on the iPad for the history of music, which is just beautiful, and it has a mixture of text and photos and videos. Or look at Auditorium, which does the same thing, mixture of text, video, and photos. And there, the iPad and iPhone are far superior to a Kindle. Kindle's great for black and white text. And the Kindle's getting so cheap now that the two device world makes sense, right? If you want to read a book, go buy a Kindle. If you want to do everything else, you know, use the iPad. So anyways, the 7-inch form factor is something that I wish Apple would invest a little bit in and see what they can do. But talking to people in the industry, it's going to be hard for them to support that form factor because of their user interface choices that they made. And you know, do you stretch up an iPhone app and make it look crappy again, or do you try to rewrite an iPad app to work on a 7-inch form factor? Which it won't do very well, because most of the apps have been designed for that 10-inch form factor. In terms of the iPhone, you know, they bought Siri, so I want to see what they do with Siri. Siri is an app that you talk to it. You say, find me a restaurant in my neighborhood tonight at 8 p.m., and it'll go and find you a list, and then you say, okay, I want to go to the Ritz. I have 4 people, and it goes and actually makes a reservation there using APIs, which is really cool. It's different than a search engine. It's an assistant engine, and it has some really interesting technology. I've done several videos on that. If they build that into the iPhone 5 and they do it really well, that could be a really cool demo and a cool use case, you know. I don't know, though. You know, smaller, faster, lighter. You know, they always try to do something designy to make it look cool, but also, you know, have the battery life go longer and have the screen be sharper.
Screens from iOS 4.3 news that you're now going to be able to, instead of hitting a home button, you swipe across the screen with 3 or 4 fingers. So there's thoughts that the home button's going to go away from the next one, and maybe the volumes as well, because that's all in software now too.
Yeah, there's some argument about that. I could see a world where the home button does go away. I mean, Steve Jobs loves it when he can get rid of buttons.
doesn't he just?
You know, he loves that, right? It makes... First
buttons
of all,
are evil!
You know, moving parts reduces reliability, increases cost, and...
That's why flash is so much better than having a little hard drive in your iPhone.
Absolutely. And so he loves, and also it doesn't feel, you know, nice to have a button. If you can have just one device with a smooth surface all the way around, it feels nicer, and he cares about that stuff. Where was I going, though? The real advantage, though, forget trying to get rid of the buttons, is, you know, if you're in Netflix and then somebody asks you a question and you want to go over to food spotting, it's a pain in the ass. You have to almost close down the app, you know, by hitting the home button. Then you have to navigate to where food spotting was and click on that, right? With the new system, you can just swipe through the apps and find, you know, oh, I'm watching Netflix. Oh, I want to go to food spotting. And you just swipe through it, and voila, food spotting pops up.
A little bit like the palm.
Yeah, it's totally to cut off the oxygen from HP, you know, because HP bought Palm and has that card metaphor, and this lets them say, well, you know, the HP doesn't have anything special anymore. <You know? laughs>
It's in here. What do you need that for?
Yeah,
cool. All right, so Jason, let's get into the news, mate. We've got to wrap this up because we've gone over 30 minutes, mate.
Well, if you like, we could skip the news this week since we've had such a good chat with
Is there any much news? Is there much news to talk about, or is that just a bit not much?
I just found stuff, but, you know, I think it's more interesting what we've been talking about.
Yeah, for sure. I agree. Well, I agree.
And a lot of it's, like, I don't know. The top thing on Tech Meme right now is the future of the iPad 2, and we've been talking about that. So
for sure, mate. For sure.
We could talk about Google's video codec change, but... We did that on the Gilmore Gang, so come over and download the Gilmore Gang.
Yeah, there we go. Free plug.
All right, for sure. Okay, well, let's wrap
this. We'll get a free plug on the Gilmore Gang, of course.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's wrap this up, Jason, and say thanks to Robert. Where can they find you on the internet, Robert?
Everywhere.
Everywhere. Twitter and your website and Facebook and...
Google Scobalizer and you'll find
me. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Quora, my blog... Twitter. Yep. Twitter's probably the best place because everything I do, I shove into Twitter. So
cool, man. And you follow anyone? You follow anyone on Twitter? Is that correct?
Anybody who's a geek. Cool. You know, I do. I'm following 31,000 people, and so usually I follow people who were recommended by other people or recommended by Twitter. But I go through and look at their bio and look at their tweets and see are they a techie? Are they writing about technology?
None of them are Britney or Lady Gaga.
Well, I might be following Lady Gaga.
We found his one favorite thing.
Yep.
Yep. No, I follow a few celebrities just to see what that world is like, but not many.
All right. And Jason, where can they find you, mate, on the internet?
JasonOakley.me and on Twitter, Warlock, WAULOK, and Brad.
And Tech Cluster, Tech Webcast, and Facebook.
Awesome. Thanks for coming on the show, Robert.
Yeah, thank you, Robert.
Really, thanks. Really it was a lot of fun.
Thank you for coming on, mate. You're a legend. And make sure you follow him on Twitter, people, for more tech updates.
Go do it.
Go do it now.
This is Tech Webcast. Computers.
Technology. Gadgets.
Another geeky stuff.
It's on iTunes. It's awesome.
And it's from the future.
Follow us at twitter.com/techwebcast
and
on Facebook and check techwebcast.info for info. Tech Webcast.
Turn on, tune in, drop on.